I have often mentioned the advantage that we have following the liturgical life, the advantage of being able to reflect on scriptures that are chosen for us by the church. And certainly there are many advantages, and that's why the church does it like that. But there is one disadvantage I should mention occasionally, and that is that we might not sense so quickly the context of the readings that we have every day, because we're just reading them according to where they fit in the liturgy rather than where they fit into the flow of the book or the letter that we take the reading from. Well, today we have an example of this because we read the gospel in Matthew. This is Matthew chapter 20. It's in two parts that seem completely unconnected. One is Jesus' prophecy of his passion, or his passion and his resurrection. And then right after that, the ambition of the two sons of Zebedee and their mother. And, you know, we don't know necessarily, if you're just looking at the liturgy, you don't know necessarily where that fits into the whole flow of Matthew's gospel. Still, the liturgy does help us in this sense. This gospel is always read in the second week of Lent, and the second week of Lent always begins with the passage about the Transfiguration. And sure enough, in Matthew's gospel, the account of the Transfiguration is chapter 17, and this is chapter 20. So we know that these two men, James and John, had already experienced this vision of Jesus' glory on the mountain. And no doubt their hearts were filled with anticipation of seeing something like that again. Now, it says, we learned on Sunday, that they didn't tell anybody about that. So we have to assume that they didn't tell their mother that they had seen this great vision. But, you know, mothers, they know their children, and they know when somebody's had something happen, and they maybe she heard them say things that were not directly about the experience, but something about a glorious future. And she picked up on it. So she's the one who approaches Jesus in the gospel. So it's important to see this in the context, because when we read, for example, passages from the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, 7, that's pretty early in Jesus' public ministry, and we can't expect the disciples to have picked up very much yet. But by the time we get to chapter 20, Jesus has given them lots of instruction on how this really works, what it really means to be poor in spirit, what it means to gain the kingdom. And one of the very clear instructions he has given is that he himself is going to suffer, die, and rise again. The beginning of today's gospel is the third time in Matthew's gospel where he gives this prophecy. And this is the most detailed of the three. He even mentions that he's going to be crucified. So Jesus has been instructing the apostles on the way to glory. If you read this today's gospel from the Annuum Way, you might have noticed that we reach the bottom of the page. Seems like that's the end of the reading. Oh, he's going to be raised on the third day. And then you turn the page and say, oh, there's a whole second paragraph, and it's all about James and John drinking the chalice. And this is, in Matthew, very deliberate. Right after, Jesus says very clearly what's going to happen in Jerusalem, they come up with this idea that they could sit at his right and at his left, as if they didn't hear anything Jesus said. Why is that deliberate? Because that's showing us exactly what we do. Every one of us here in the chapel has heard the story of Jesus' death and resurrection. We've heard his prophecies about how the way to glory is by being humbled. But as soon as some opportunity shows up, that just disappears from our mind, And we think, oh, here's a great thing. Here's a way for me to rise up. Here's a way for me to get ahead. It just comes so naturally to human nature to shoot for advancement. I would love to know the dynamic of Zebedee's family a little more. We don't know how it all worked. I mean, we know that the two sons abandoned him in his boat. We know that was way back in the beginning. Now the mother seems to be part of the crowd among the disciples. In fact, there's a tradition that she's one of the women who assisted Jesus. So, but we don't know what happened to Zebedee. Maybe he was in the group too. I mean, keep the family together. Who knows? But no doubt they're very strong-willed people. James and John, remember, sons of thunder. They're very strong people. And now here's their mother, who's got a strength of her own. So we don't get more description of them in the scriptures, but we can ponder what it's like. One of the things that I always notice in this gospel is how gentle Jesus is with them. He doesn't rebuke the mother. He doesn't say, mind your own business. What are you doing trying to control the lives of your sons? He doesn't say anything negative to her. And he doesn't even say anything negative to the two disciples. He just indicates to them that they don't really know what they're asking. His only correction comes later when the other 10 start to get bent out of shape about the two getting ahead of them. And then he says, wait a minute, you're all wrong. But he doesn't say that James and John are wrong. And that's always striking to me. There's a kind of acceptance of the human desire to advance. Because that is put in our hearts. God made us, he made us for glory. He made us for glory. He made us for communion. He made us for joy. And so we should want glory. We should want communion with God. We should want to be near Jesus in his reign, at his right and at his left. That's a good ambition. And so Jesus doesn't say, no, don't even think of it. Don't be so self-centered. He doesn't say that. He says, you don't know what you're asking. Can you drink of my chalice? So his correction is not don't shoot high, but don't shoot high in the way that you're shooting high. Don't try to advance in the human way. Do it my way. You remember last year when we were studying St. Joseph, and we learned the proposal of some of the saints that the two seats at the right and at the left of Jesus are for Mary and Joseph, even though most artwork shows Mary and John the Baptist, but Mary and Joseph. In any case, the two seats closest to Jesus are already reserved. So we can't set our hearts on what is not God's will, but we are supposed to set our hearts on glory. But the way to glory is what is so contradictory to us. It includes this going down. And that we think we should go up. And God says, well, the way up is by going down. The way to glory is by humility. The way to reign is by service. This comes up again and again, but it's very clear in today's gospel when Jesus instructs all 12 of them. Now, the mother seems to have been forgotten at some point here because he calls the 12 aside again. Now, this is instruction especially for the 12, because as if the mother doesn't have it wrong, but the 12 have it wrong. Well, what are mothers supposed to want for their children? The best. It's not normal for parents to say, I just want my children to have a good enough life. They're supposed to want the best for their children. That's right. Doesn't mean to manipulate or control, but it does mean shoot for the highest and encourage children to be excellent. Yes. Okay, so I just keep noticing how Jesus accepts the mother's desire for her sons to have a high place. But in his instruction to the 12, he makes it very clear. If you want to be great, be a servant. If you want to be first, be a slave. Why? Because this is the way that I myself am revealing to you. The Son of Man did not come to be served. He did not spend his life in this world rising up. He came to serve. So that's the way. Now, it's very contradictory to us, and this is what we hear from Jeremiah in the first reading. That how can it be like this? I mean, here I am, Jeremiah saying, I'm doing what God told me to do, and in return, I get all this backlash. I get all this opposition. I hear people, they're all out to get me. And he asks this question, which is really poignant, and this comes to our minds whenever we experience the contradiction. The line is this: must good be repaid with evil? Must good be repaid with evil? I'm sure you've experienced this. You do something good, and in return, you get attacked, or at least criticized. And you say, well, what is this? It's not supposed to be like that. Well, don't be so sure that it's not supposed to be like that, because the way to glory is by humility. The way to reign is by service. So if, and God is the one who works this out, we can't figure it out, but we can know the principle and we can cooperate with it. When we're committed to doing good, we're going to experience opposition. Maybe not a literal crucifixion, but certainly opposition. If not persecution, at least ridicule. Now, that's an easy one in the modern world for people to tease or laugh at anyone's attempt to do what's right. But so that's what we will experience, and we will say to ourselves, is good supposed to be rewarded with evil, repaid with evil? And then we have to back off and say, that's what Jesus got for doing good. What was Jesus' reward in this life for doing good? He was crucified. So we should not expect in this life a reward of goodness for goodness, of glory for being holy. That isn't how it works here. But remember, the whole journey of Jesus doesn't end with crucifixion. It leads to resurrection and ascension, sitting at the right hand of the Father. Well, that's where we're going. What we're being given here then is another Lenten instruction about the need to go down, to be humbled, to empty ourselves, to give ourselves. Because this is the way forward, as contradictory as it seems to us, as bad as it looks at times, this is the way forward. So don't forget the lesson when some opportunity to advance in the world shows up, or when some persecution shows up. Those experiences don't change the basic teaching. The way to reign is by service. The way to go up is by going down with the Lord.